Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease and a whole lot of love, you transform 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. LED headlights, spoilers, whatever you need. eBay Motors has it at affordable prices. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride every time. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Oh, and down goes Jordan Smith for the second time in this race. Kickstart Kenny wins!
I don't win that much anymore, you know what I mean? Like...
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Title 24 this week, presented by NBC Sports. Myself, Ryan Villopoto, here to give you the goods this week. It's going to be a lot of fun. We got a great show on tap. A lot of stuff went down this weekend. Not a lot of drama. We're excited to talk about it. I think you guys are going to really enjoy it. Can't wait to hear what RV has to say. Before we get going, like we always do, we got to thank our incredible partners, United Motorsports, Boxo, Quadlock, and of course Dunlop Tires. We appreciate you guys, and we got some segments built in our show to give those guys some cred, talk about their great products, and get you guys familiar with all of them. So man, it was a good race this weekend. RV, I always loved going to Glendale. Clearly it's a fast track. Your take, like, overall, what'd you think of it? Did you like the track? Did you not like the track? Was there anything that stood out to you that you want to rip the Band-Aid off on right now?
Well, I mean, like you said, it was going Phoenix there, Glendale. Yep. The biggest floor we have, you know, dude, that one rhythm section was super long. I thought I heard 16 jumps in that thing, and a lot of those five footers, you know. So, and when we mm-hmm. talk about five footers, we kind of talk about 5 foot tall by the base being 5 foot wide too, and then we call the littler ones 3 footers. But yeah, that's a lot of jumps in that rhythm section. So that was pretty cool to see. Dude, those guys had to have their timing on point and not forget where they were in that rhythm section. You know, we got to see Nate Thrasher go down in that rhythm section, just coming up short on one of those combinations, you know, mid straightaway down that long rhythm section. So you had to really stay on your toes there, not kind of forget where you were. But nonetheless, track was tough, typical Glendale, really slippery, hard, but also some pretty good areas where it is a little bit tacky. The turns got rutted up, I think, a little more than kind of normal than we've maybe saw than what we can see sometimes in Arizona there. Sometimes it's very blue groove and just hard. So good racing surface there that we saw at Glendale.
Hey dude, like, watching you and your career and your riding style, do you feel like, did you like those style tracks over like how Detroit was?
I did. I kind of liked, I did like the
faster
stuff
tempo.
Faster, but also the material, the dirt that you could really kind of slide around on. Really have to trust the sides of your tires. Where we saw Jordan Smith go down there on the, like, coming onto the start straight there, coming across. I mean, that thing was just like ice right there. So if you can be quick in those spots on the track and hold actually inside of a lot of the riders, you know, you can make a lot of good, make some good headway, potentially some good passes there.
Right. One of our fans, as far as the track, had a question for us. Reyes asks, why do you guys think that no one quadded anything, especially on a rhythm lane so long? I mean, I haven't asked you this, RV. So why do you think we didn't see anyone quadding anything? Go for it with the rhythm lane.
I mean, watching that rhythm section all night throughout race day live, the day program, and then into the night show and into the main broadcast, like, those guys a lot of those rhythm sections, yeah, were they holding those 450s like wide open? No, they weren't. But it wasn't a slow rhythm section. So if you would have popped off a quad in there, it would have been massive, massive, right? So, and we got to see some in the presser with, that was one of the questions that Jason Anderson got asked and answered too. You know, look, these guys don't want to have to jump the quad. If it's available, I felt like in that rhythm section, watching every one of the riders from Jet all the way down, maybe there was potential to do it. But for me, I thought what they were doing was already kind of gnarly, you know, like keeping, keeping track of where you were. The one, the specific jump I was talking about with Thrasher, some of the those guys were seat bouncing it. Some guys were standing up through it. So that one obviously had a smaller takeoff. And as you start to generate more speed through that rhythm section and you get towards the end there, it becomes a little harder to time once you get over a certain mile per hour, you know, like as, as you're then trying to modulate the throttle, where if you can stay, you know, third gear through that entire rhythm section and kind of have an equal throttle through every triple, I think it's just, it's easier, it's safer. As soon as you pop off one of those quads, you're automatically going like 5 to 10 miles an hour quicker at the end of the straightaway, you know?
And then, as you know, RV and all of our viewers and listeners, well, those speeds start going up. And then when you quad, and if you make, if you mess up and you case something when you're quadding, you have so much speed, so much height that in, you more times than not, you're not going to ride it out. There's no, there's no shot whatsoever. I will say this. I'm a little bit older. You never raced at the pinnacle of the sport on a two-stroke. Now, you have ridden Supercross, two-stroke on a Supercross. That's where the two-stroke was nice and longer lanes like that, RV, because you could just – you didn't have to worry about the speed as much because you could hit everything, especially triples, like tapped in
pretty
second
much
gear. So you just – exactly. You didn't – so timing things – yeah, you had to time stuff, but it was a little easier because you just, you were pretty much tapped out in second.
Yeah. And that's so that the difference, nice. Like you said, that with 450, like they have so much get up and go. You come out of a turn or in that rhythm section, you give her a little too much of the berries, you're going to end up overshooting or, you know, like you said, it really comes down to a critical situation when you do, when you are generating that much speed and that much height and you're, and you land on one of those jumps. And if it would have been, you know, a landing on a 5 footer or even the 3 footers, the smaller ones, and you come to a dead stop, like you are going down, you know, and it's going to be pretty, pretty catastrophic, not to mention your ankles and everything else that if you case those things. So yeah, I'm glad that there was no quads.
Me too.
In that section. Me too. I thought that, you know, there was, I think Kenny was doing a little bit different combination in there.
Yeah, which Jet was. Yep, I was. Think I watched Jet do this, RV, in practice. He was quietly doing it, and I'm like, oh, he's gonna hold this to the main event. But he would come out of that first corner, he would double instead of like roll and then single up onto that like step up tabletop thing they had. He would like hit that little roller on the inside, he would double, then backside that tabletop and then go 3-3-3-3 single, but he's I think he was sizing up the quad into the corner. That's what I think he was doing. So he ended up never doing it. But while, and for the record, I'm with you on the quads. You know, I know a lot of people have opinions on rhythm lanes and whoops and lengths and all that. I think quad, like anytime there's a quad, I think that is a recipe for disaster. I second you on that. Speaking of quads, enough of, RV and I talking about it. The man, Jason Anderson, which had a great ride this weekend, he tells us about the quad and why he doesn't like them or didn't do them.
Yeah, but to be honest, nowadays with quads or anything like that, I'm not going to be the first one to hit them. That's for sure. I'm too old. And to be honest, I thought all day I thought we were going to go the line that Kenny was doing where he jumped off the thing and then was going 3-3. I was waiting for someone to go big to big. And honestly, that type of stuff at the age I'm at right now just gives me anxiety. I don't even want to think about it. I feel like, to be honest, right now, a 450 motorcycle, those quads, are relatively easy. It's just the amount of error that is involved with maybe it going bad or anything like that. I'm thankful that no one was willing to take that risk because then we would all just start doing it, you know?
Well, nowadays you can actually over jump stuff on the 450, and that's what makes it tough, the timing side of things, yeah.
Dude, okay.
Right there, he's exactly what we were talking about.
And for the record, all of our viewers and listeners, I haven't even seen that sound bite until right now. So I'm not basing what RV and I were talking about. RV, I don't think you saw it either. And if did you see that? Have you seen that?
I saw it right before our show. But yes, I that is fact right there. We both spoke on it. All three of us spoke on it. Kenny's actually four of us, you know, Jason, Kenny and myself and you. So, no, that's exactly right. These bikes have so much power. The timing is the critical part. And like Jason said, it was big to big. It wasn't big to a smaller one, to a 3-footer like I was talking about. It was a 5-footer to a 5-footer. If you were to actually step that off, you're probably looking at close to 70 something feet in the middle of a rhythm section, you know, carrying all that speed. So if there were a mistake at that speed, it's very, very catastrophic. So like he said, I was glad that nobody did it. I thought it kept the racing close because as soon as somebody pops off one of those quads, it's automatically like half a second a lap, and then you could your race could be get broke up and pull away, or like one mistake, you could have a guy completely out of the series if he falters on a quad like that.
Right. Shifting gears to the 450. We're gonna get into the nuts and bolts here. If you haven't yet, go over to UnitedMotorsports.com. Check their website out. They got a great website, just a great company, 6 locations across Ohio and Kentucky. And remember, if you're watching right here, go to www.unitedmotorsports.com/title24. They are doing a one-time deal where when you sign up, you get $15 credit to your first purchase, and then they're going to be picking out winners each week to give an additional $50 to a purchase. So really cool what United Motorsports is doing, and we appreciate you. And with that said, that leads us to the United Motorsports moment of the night. And RV, of course, you know it's going to be Ken Roczen. Just an incredible win. Does it come as a surprise? Heck no, it doesn't. I mean, you go back to A1. I was talking to my dad yesterday about this, and, you know, like, go back to Anaheim 1. The guy crushed it in the heat race. Then he goes down, and then kind of he's been in a slump ever since then, I feel like. So on paper, isn't a true result of just how well he's been riding and what he's capable of. Just dude made it happen. I mean, did it come to a surprise as you, or, like, what did you think when you were watching Kenny?
I figured before the season started, we had Kenny with 1-3 wins, when this thing all wraps up in the end. Rode really well, like you said, at Anaheim 1. Then we had our 2 mud races. It was bound to happen, you know, putting himself in a good position off the line and riding the way Kenny can ride. And I think that track, Glendale, it might have suited his riding styles a little. You know, Kenny very smooth on the throttle. His whoop speed, I thought his motorcycle in the whoops this weekend, I thought was maybe some of the best motorcycle, maybe one of the best motorcycles out there. Especially heat race qualifier, like he was able to just blaze a trail through the whoops faster than most. So looked like the bike was working well. Kenny was in good headspace. He rode phenomenal, 0 mistakes. That's the Kenny that we know. And I think he can do it again too. I think he's gonna win a couple more by the end we wrap this series up. But he's looking well. The Suzuki's is working well too. I said this last year, it's really cool to see this is that HB Suzuki team and them coming together and Dustin Pipes and his dad putting that thing together with Progressive. And man, they got a couple wins this, you know, from last year and this year, the seasons, and they're gonna keep building on it. So it's cool to see.
Yeah, that team's done a great job. And RV, you talked about them a lot last year. It was, you know, their first year getting going. They got some great guys there. Larry Brooks, in particular, with his history and the amount of success and legends within the industry that he's worked with, riders, you know, guys like Jeremy McGrath, Chad Reed. He's got a lot of wins and championships, especially in Supercross. So those guys know what they're doing, and it's cool to see. Let me ask you this. Do you, when I listen to Kenny, and it's almost like he says, like, he, you know, he knows he doesn't win that much anymore. I don't think he said that exactly, but something along those lines. Like, what's your take on him mentally, and why do you think that it's a surprise for him to win? And why do you think that he doesn't almost like believe in himself that he can't go on and crack off, you know, four to six wins? Why do you think that?
Man, I think he's chosen a little different road, than the typical, you know, Supercross, motocross, Eli Tomac of the world. You know, he's bounced around from World Supercross to now, Super Motocross, and he jumped into High Point last year. You know, so, and I also think that, look, he's got two kids, he's older, he's been in this game for a long time. I think, I like his mentality, his thinking, and, mm-hmm. you know, sure, if a championship was there for the taking, you're going to have Kenny take that. You're going to have him give him a really good shot, that right. shot at. But right mm-hmm. now, as he sits, right, he, I think the points are, he's 20-ish or 18 or so down. Yep. You know, so decent gap, not completely out of it, but essentially out of it. I think he's in a 15 down for Kenny right now.
Looking at the points. Yeah.
Realistic with what he is capable of doing. He knows he's capable of winning, but maybe he's just not in it for that long haul. And I think that's also one of the reasons why he's chosen to race this different series and races and not, you know, just not the cookie cutter Supercross motocross. He's bouncing around. So I think it's a mentality thing. I think it's where he's at in his life, where he's at with his family and his career. He still loves racing. He can win a yep. race. We just watched him knock down his first win of the season.
Kick. I mean, dude, he whipped everyone. I mean, he put on yep. a clinic. He put yep. on an absolute yep. clinic.
So I think it's just probably a little bit of a mentality thing. I think if it's there for the taking, he's going to take it. But I also think that Kenny's been in this game long enough. He's had some gnarly injuries. He's been able to come back from those injuries, and still be able to be one of the top guys. But maybe he just isn't really, you know, like I said, in it for the championship, like really going to put it all out on the line, if that makes sense.
Yeah, dude, it totally does. It makes 100% sense. One thing before I get into Aaron Plessinger. I want to give Ken a shout out. So, if you guys haven't watched the SMX Insiders post race show, go do it. Will Christian talks to Kenny about, you know, the bike setup, and listen, it's no secret. If you guys are in the trenches in Supercross and Motocross RV, you know how it was. So when he was at RCH, it was, dude, it was a roughy road, 120%. Now we can laugh and joke about it, Kenny and I, and everyone over there. There was some massive heartburn. Kenny was young. But what he said to Will is, he's like, listen, I haven't changed my bike much. And, you know, if I go to the track and I'm not feeling too comfortable, instead of changing the bike, I would rather make the adjustment myself. And I was thinking, I'm like, damn, dude, why didn't you have that approach when you were at RCH? It's kind of like, because I would tell him, you know, I'm like, listen, dude, I know you want your bike to work a certain way. It's not going to work that way. So yeah. You know how it is, RV. Yeah. You have, sometimes you just have to, adjust what you're doing based on how your bike is handling.
100%.
And he was like, it's got to work this way. I'm like, dude, it's not going to. Stop thinking like that. And so, Kenny, I just want to tell you, great job. I know, but RV, it's got to be so much easier on him mentally, having that approach. Like, okay, listen, I know the bike's only going to work a certain way, so I just need to change what I'm doing. I'm happy for Kenny, as far as that goes, right?
I mean, 100%. And to your point of you know, there's some of these motorcycles do things really, really well, and they do other places on the track they're not so well. And if you fix where they're not so well, and a lot of times where they were good, they're not good anymore. Right. You know, you can only get the motorcycle so good, And like you said, Kenny, instead of just chasing the motorcycle, he's maybe saying, okay, this bike doesn't go well in that line, or I have to adjust. Just like back to my old Kawasaki, it liked to ride the outsides a lot. It was very hard to get that motorcycle to go inside and ride the lines.
Right.
I would never ride the lines. Dunge would ride in supercross because the motorcycle really didn't do it well. So you got to know that and realize that and be okay with, hey, I'm just going to have to do it like this, not try to critique, change that motorcycle and to make it do something that it may not really like to do.
Yep. Good stuff, Kenny. Hey, TDS 404. Is there anything that's going to stop Kenny now that his confidence just went to the moon? I mean, I think the only thing that's going to stop him is himself and some other great riders. Listen, the field is so deep, and we're going to talk about this. I don't know. I can't sit here and tell you what is going to stop him. I mean, dude, he's good. I don't think that, I wouldn't say that he will get on a roll by any stretch, but that's a good question, right?
Yeah. Kenny's got to he's got to put himself in good starting positions every main event start. And we've talked about this. We beat the dead horse all the time. It's starting position every single weekend. I don't care who you are. We've just watched Jet now not get off the line the last few weekends, where, you know, up front, and you can see even of Jet's caliber, how hard it is to come through the pack, how hard it is to race these guys and make the moves and come through the pack to get to the front. You know, it's just not going to happen. So you got to put yourself in a good starting position. So I think any one of these guys, but we're talking about Kenny, and this topic is Kenny, he's got to put himself up front, good starting
position. Yeah, he does.
He did right there. And I think he has more shots, like I said, to win more races this season.
And last thing on Ken, Brandon Benham asks, do you think Kenny would be winning races or ride as good as he is if he wasn't on a Suzuki? For the record, I think he'd be doing exactly the same. So what's your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I think that Kenny has been on the factory side for many, many years, and now he's like semi-factory, call it. I personally kind of like where he's at. I think that it gels with his vibe, who he is as a person. Is he serious? He is a serious, racer when it comes to race time, but Kenny also likes to have fun and joke around and
freedom.
And for the freedom and this AGB Suzuki might be exactly, you know, the perfect mesh of being able to have a decent enough platform and motorcycle, but also have the leeway he wants, on the political side with the teams and sponsors and things like that. It's definitely more free over there than it would be anywhere else. And I think that he gels with that. That's something that he wanted, I believe.
As far as Jet and Eli goes, like what we got before we roll the sound, I want to get your ideas and your thoughts on the battle between Jet and Eli. What did you think of that? You may not even have thought of anything.
I thought it was good to see. I got to see the presser of Jet talking about, you know, Eli and racing Eli Tomac and passing Eli Tomac. I think that's, you know, we have such different, you know, age and a huge age gap, right? You have a young kid coming up and you have Eli basically kind of on his way out. This is one of his, you know, potentially his last season. He hasn't really talked about it, but it could be. We right now is what we could be seeing, his last season and a hell of a season at that. I know a lot of, people are kind of giving him some, you know, I've got on Vital and it's like, man, Eli should retire. Do you really understand what you guys are talking about when you say,
hell no, they don't,
you know,
no, what I mean? They don't.
They don't, you know, I mean, yes. Is he on form, old Eli, what we saw last year before being hurt? No, he's not yet, but he's still one of the best damn riders out there, and give the guy some slack, give the guy some more leeway. And if he ends up sticking kind of where he's at and finishes out his career where he's at, that's still one hell of a season to finish your career on. So,
well, Absolutely, yeah. Dude. And you just got me, dude. I'm gonna blow my top right now just because I was thinking about this morning. I'm like getting ready, kind of mentally preparing, and I'm doing my workout and I'm thinking, you know, like to your point, you got on the boards and people just, you know, they're chirping. And here's the thing, okay? Think if Eli didn't race this season. And he went out the way that he did. Take everything into consideration. Think of the type of competitor that Eli is. Think of what he's accomplished and just, you know, what he is as a whole, as an athlete. He said in the offseason, he didn't want to go out that way. Okay. And that he wanted to go out there and give it another shot. Okay. I would rather him do what he is doing than have not, or it have ended the way that it did. So listen, is it working out the way that that he is hoping right now? Probably not. Is it still early? It's getting a little too late in the season. You know, we only got one more race, two more races, and we're halfway through the Monster Energy Supercross series. So, yeah. After that, if he doesn't figure it out and he doesn't get to where he was last year, who cares? Mm. Dude, he's going out there. He's doing the best that he can do. And you know what? That's all you can ask from the guy. It's a completely different season. This season is top of the history charts as far as competitiveness and how close the championship battle is. One of those reasons is because, knock on wood, because so many guys are staying healthy. So it's going to be in nature. Is going to be harder for that guy. Give the man a break. I think he's doing all right. And you know what? Yeah. If he's not the Eli of old, who cares? At least he's not a quitter, and he wanted to go out and give it another
try. Still out there. Yeah, be thankful that he's still out there, that he's still putting
right,
on
his dude. It's like, come on, really, man. Like, right. Yeah. And you know what? If he gets going, great. What that'd be a hell of a story, and it'll be great for the sport, and then he can retire. For everything that I'm hearing, I feel like this is going to be his last season.
Yep.
But you know what? I commend the dude for going out there and wanting to go out on his own terms and not ending it the way that it ended last year for him in Denver. And you know what? If he doesn't reach the true peak of where he once was, probably not going to. Who cares? He's still a bad man, and he's going to be on the Mount Rushmore of the sport. He's the second winningest Supercross racer as far as wins go of all time, behind the king of Supercross. So, man, I just get off the dude's back. And what you said, RV, embrace the dude. Be pumped for him.
Yeah, and not to mention, guys, he's already got one Triple Crown win. It's not an overall yet, but it's a gate drop against all the same dudes, and he ended up on top of that step in the third Triple Crown at Anaheim 2. So the guy's not far off. I think
he ain't no scrub, bro.
And everybody's got to, if this is what you're watching of his last hurrah, you better be thankful for it, because it's going to be gone and over with. And everybody, right. Then pretty soon you'll be back on Vital, everybody, and been like, man, I wish Eli was back there. I see that all the time, man. I wish you were racing. You know, it's like, yeah, well, it's long gone now, buddy. So,
So that was dude. Awesome stuff. I agree with you. So kind of like what we were talking about with the quad, RV and I just sitting on our couches, retired, talking about what coulda, shoulda, and what we would have done back in our day or not have done back in the day. Jet Lawrence talks about racing Eli and what that was like, because in the offseason, Eli had said, Jet had said that he looked forward to racing Eli. And you got to think about this, is Jet has never... When we roll this tape, you got to keep this in mind that Jet's really never raced with Eli very much, battling, okay, and learning what Eli does, maybe learning what Eli doesn't do. So just keep that in mind, even though there's been, six races throughout the series.
Yep.
Roll the tape, and let's see what Jet says about racing Eli.
It was just kind of learning this, obviously, how he kind of flows and kind of learning where – kind of the kink in the armor could be almost, and it was cool. It was cool to kind of follow him, because obviously nowadays it's not like the exact same as the beast as he used to be, but it's still Eli Tomac. So it was kind of cool to follow him, just learn off him, and this kind of I just got close enough of where we can kind of maybe make a a pass, and I was looking forward to a battle, but I was able to kind of just get on the inside of him a little bit and give a still leave a bit of room, and then kind of just put my head down and just keep on clicking the laps off, and I got a safety kind of safety net with a bit of a gap, and just kept on trying to see if I can chip away to Jason, but I just end up running out of time.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Harvey?
Yeah, no, I look, like you said, they haven't really got to, Jet hasn't really got to follow Eli right. very much. And like I had mentioned when this at the start of this topic was is the age gap, is the maturity gap, the amount of races that Eli has under his belt versus Jet. So, you know, look, we got for the viewers watching, we got Jet and Eli. You can look, Eli just kind of went outside, didn't really fight him for it. You know, I think he knew it was coming. That's the veteran in Eli. If he could stick with him and keep pressure on him. But I don't think he wanted to, you know, have Jet behind him. Roles reversed. He wanted to be the follower behind Jet there, and maybe he could learn something and see where he can elevate his speed a little bit. You know, that's what I think Eli's missing right now, is just the speed necessarily isn't there. He doesn't want to hang it out as much, maybe. As we've seen in the past. And I thought it was a good interview from Jet, you know.
You think they're gonna beat him up as far as like what he said? He's not the
I think
Eli,
they might beat
Eli
him
of
up.
Old.
Yep, I think the fans might beat him up a little bit. You know, I chalk that up to once again is being young and not being in that position. I thought I read between the lines. I hear what Jet is saying. He's stoked to be able to ride with Eli and see where his maybe weak points are. But nonetheless, he was able to make a quick move on him and pull away. So I'm hoping to see that he's not out of the game just yet, but I want to see if he can bridge that gap. And not even for the championship's sake, but just for race wins, and see if he can get back in there and solidify himself as win some more of these races on his way out. If it is his last one.
Yeah. I would say this much. And, if that was for the win, that pass was for the lead, I should say. You talk about the changing of the guard. I think that was one of the topics, of the opening of the show in Anaheim. RV is like, have we seen a changing of the guard? And if I'm Eli, I would have been pissed. I'm like, why are you guys just chalking it up as there is a changing of the guard? And does Eli feel like that? And I don't feel like that was a changing of the guard type of move, because it wasn't for the win. It was late in the race. And I think to your point also is that, yeah, there was an element there where Eli was probably like, let me follow this dude and for as long as I can and see what he's doing. And maybe I can learn something that's going to help me get back in the position to be in this championship battle. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't think it was. CDHD HL 230. That's a heck of a handle there. Why didn't Eli put up much of a fight against Jet and basically let him by? RV, you answered it. You said exactly right what you thought and why he did that.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease and a whole lot of love, you transform 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. LED headlights, spoilers, whatever you need. eBay Motors has it at affordable prices. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride every time. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TRUGREEN.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
I like Cooper Webb, bro. Cooper Webb, he says, he wrote like, you know, the emoji, crap emoji. And I was thinking, we're watching some video of Cooper. He's in front of Chase Sexton right now. And yeah, he just a lackluster performance, but historically he's never been good here. Myself personally, I feel like because he's never been good here, and I wanted to ask you this, RV, do you feel like maybe the tempo and the faster track doesn't suit his style? Do you think there's any validation to that comment or not really?
Yeah, I look, like, it's historically he hasn't done the greatest on hard pack is probably what I'm going to go with. If anybody ever really watch Coop come into his turns, watch how aggressive, how strong he puts on the front brake, right? So his riding style is very aggressive isn't the word, but he knows how to turn that motorcycle. He knows how to bring that motorcycle in there under major load under the front wheel. And when it's slippery like this, when it's that type of dirt, that texture, you know, maybe he's just not as comfortable as, you know, once we get to the East Coast where he can really dive in there and grab that front brake. I've heard in the past through the pits of like, there's nobody that uses the front brake as much or as hard as he does. I've heard it's pretty, Carlos actually, when he was at Red Bull KTM, he had mentioned that to me. He goes, the guy uses the front brake like massive amounts of power in it. And so potentially that's what it is. But, you know, I think that wasn't a bad showing. That wasn't a bad outing for him. I think he's still in this thing for, you know, I think guys need to don't sleep on Coop because he's, once we get back east, we get to Daytona, we get where, you know, where the dirt tends to be a little more tacky, where those very inside lines are really strong, where Coop's really strong on those very tight inside lines. I think we're going to see him, you know, get some more of these wins.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Hey, what'd you think of that move by Coop, just using up the track on Jet?
Yeah, right here.
What do you think of that
sand turn here? I've free game, buddy. Like, you know, you're out there, out on the outside. You know, Jet. You know, I don't think it was dirty by no means. Coop kind of made a little mistake there. He ran him out into the sand, out wide. Yeah.
I would have done it to him.
Exactly.
That's a track, right?
Heads up racing, knowing what's happening, running him out wide, using up all the track, and you know, end up having Jet go off the track and jump back on, obviously right there in front of mechanics area, but nothing too crazy. I know I saw a comment of like, off the track and he's back on the gas. Well, he was literally off the track for like 5 feet, right? That was the safest point of entry back onto the track. And he just followed suit right back into the pack that was behind him.
Yeah. And I feel like the AMA, they, you know, when you get knocked off the track or pushed off the track, it's a little different than self-induced where you're making a mistake and you go off the track. Like that was kind of, I mean, everything is a racing incident. I know like the people on the boards are going to chew us up for that. If we make the wrong call here, but at the end of the day, he lost positions. As you'll see, that probably would help the situation. Look, I mean, the dude is completely out of control right there. So anyhow, I got to give massive props to Chase Sexton, RV, for a couple of reasons. Number one, letting us all know that he was a little banged up, because if he hadn't, I mean, we would have been chewing him apart right now and him riding like a scrub. So thank you very much, Chase Sexton, for being open and honest. I guarantee you, you saying that and us sharing it on the broadcast didn't change anyone's race strategy, I don't believe, and it didn't hurt you in any way, shape, or form as far as results go. And it gave us an opportunity, RV, to just say, hey, look, dude, go out there, do the best you can, and you know, we made him look like a hero, or didn't have to wonder why he wasn't performing at the top level. Do you even want to comment on how he rode or what?
He rode well, you know, dealing with a bone contusion, especially on that track, the high speed, how hard it is too, like the dirt being very hard and Blue Groove, the feedback through the motorcycle is much more than on, say, like Detroit, right, where the dirt's a lot mm-hmm. softer. So probably a major struggle for him, but he went out there and left it all out there on the track. You know, I'm sure he wasn't stoked with the ride, but he did what he had to do and stayed in it, kept this thing alive for himself. It's going to be interesting to see how long that sticks around. You know, if that's a nagging yep. injury, is it a week and then we're back to kind of normal, or is this going to be something that he has to deal with through a couple rounds? Because if he has to deal with something like that, you know, a hand injury through a couple rounds, mm-hmm. and we have a couple off nights like we saw him be par for the course because of his hand, that's going to be pretty devastating in the championship hunt and the points, you know. So let's hope. Let's get the red light therapy. Let's get the ice bath, whatever we're going to do, whatever he needs. And let's try to get that thing healed up so we don't so he doesn't lose any more ground.
Hey, I bought a little red light therapy machine. Nice. Do you believe in the red light therapy? Are you a fan?
Yeah, I think I haven't spent a lot of time. Yes, I believe in all that stuff. Doc G's got all the good stuff.
He's got all the toys.
Yeah, he's got all the toys. So,
hey RV, dude, you called it here on Title 24 before the series started. We were role playing and, you know, being like the keyboard warriors. And I heard something this week about Chase Sexton. And I don't know if you've heard it already, but I just got to bring it up because we need some drama. Do you know, you think?
I don't
you
know. I know. This is news to me.
I heard that he's at the Baker factory now.
Oh, is that what you heard?
Yep.
Okay.
I heard that. You said, hey, you gave him 5 to 6 races, and if things weren't going the way that they needed to be going, he'd be back there. Now, I don't think that he is. I don't think he's working with Eldon, but
full time or
yeah. But I heard some rumblings that that he was back at the. You called it.
Yeah. And I'm going to be honest. Maybe some of the fans are, you know, disagree, but I think that that's something that Chase needs to explore. I honestly do think he needs to explore that avenue with Eldon. I think he's done it long enough, and it's worked pretty well for him. But I do think that maybe. I know Peter Park, love Peter Park. I think he's really, really intelligent with on the training side. But I also think that having Eldon in your corner that has gone through yourself, that has gone through James, that has gone through me, that has gone through Dungy, that's unreplaceable knowledge. And I think where Chase is at in his career, he's not a young kid. He's very established. He knows how to work hard. He's already unbelievably fit, but where are the chinks, and can Eldon identify those? Because he's had 5 successful riders from yourself all the way up through me, Dunge and James, like I had said, can he get Chase that extra 2 to 5% that he needs to be one of the best riders to swing a leg over a bike?
Dude, that is incredible analysis, RV. That thought never even crossed my mind, and I got to tell you, I completely agree with that. And what sucks too, like, is like you talking about Peter Park and who does all his off bike stuff, is like that guy is bright. I've had opportunities to chat with him at length when he was working with Kenny back in the RCH days, and just a super intelligent guy. And I kind of believe in what he does, a lot of things in what he does in his training program. So, yeah, I dude. That is 100% validation. I agree with what you're saying.
Yep.
Wow, I'm just sitting here thinking like, wow.
I do. I think that he needs to explore that option. I think that that potentially, even just from the mental side, to have somebody like Eldon in his corner. Like I said, I love Peter Park. I know he's really good at what he does, but Peter also is off bike only, pretty much, right? He's familiar with motocross. He's familiar with what we do in Supercross. But you cannot discount the years and years and years of that Eldon has spent with yourself, James, Dunge, and myself. And we've all been champions through and have the highs and through the lows that he's had to deal with. And I think that that is something Chase needs to do. I think he needs to start tomorrow.
Yep. You called it.
That's right.
Man, RV, you did. I think it was, it may have been on our lead up, our pre-show for A1 opener. And you're going to say 5 to 6 rounds. And if the train ain't moving in the right direction, he's going to be back.
Yep.
You nailed it. All right, dude, that's enough. We have a lot of meat here for the 250. Again, just a quick recap on the 450 class. In history, this is one of the best seasons, most competitive seasons we have seen in decades, dating all the way back to the mid 80s with RJ, O'Mara, Wardy, Glover, all those guys and Bailey. So everybody, you know what? We could sit here and be lying to you if we thought we knew who we were going to win. It's just a hell of a year to be a fan and tune in and see who's going to rise to the occasion. For the 250, dude, RJ looked pretty darn comfortable in the main event. He had some scares in qualifying practice, but really, I mean, he rode like the veteran he is and was very impressive, I thought.
Yep, he did. He was able to break Levi. He was able to break Levi. You know, I thought I was hoping Levi was going to be able to remount and remount to charge to bridge the gap up and have one hell of a race. But he wasn't. So RJ rode a phenomenal race there at Glendale on Saturday. We just was looking at the podium for the folks that are going to watch this on YouTube. You saw Joe Shimoda up there for the very first time. Levi was second and RJ first. So it's close race. It's really good to see those two finally, really being a player. And what I mean, player consistency every weekend. That's one thing that that the lights guys tend or the 250 guys tend to, have some issues is with the day in and day out of racing every weekend. But they're showing up every weekend, Levi himself and RJ. So this thing's gonna go down to the end. And I'm stoked. It's gonna be one good championship fight.
Yeah, you got three. Great guys. Three riders, very similar in speed. We're looking at a points right here, and you can see Jordan Smith is behind 4 points, and then RJ is only behind 5 points. The biggest thing I think I would give RJ Hampshire the. Even though he's 5 points out of the lead, I would give him the benefit right now only because he won. He did it in dominating fashion. They got 5 weeks off. So I give the momentum to RJ. He was definitely class of the field. He was picture perfect in what I think was a pretty pretty important race mentally. And there was a lot of pressure on that race. So these guys, to your point, it's going to be great. If you are at a Monster Energy Supercross, go over to the Monster Energy Star Racing Yamaha team and check out their Boxo USA setup. For our Boxo breakdown this week, we're going to talk about Jordan Smith and his mistakes and what led to eventually we'll get to our Dunlop segment, due diligence segment, but go check out Boxo, check out their website, boxousa.com. Great company. We talked about it, whether you're off-road, you got boat stuff, dude, they got tool bags that for off-road boating, you name it. So you can kind of do order things a la carte for your moto boxes also. I have a moto box there. Check it out. RV, we need to get you dialed as well. That's right. But the Boxo breakdown. So you got Jordan Smith in there. Okay. He was in the lead, right? I believe he was in the lead. Yeah. And he This is
in the lead, coming onto the start straight here through the sand, and right here just pushes the front. Look how, see how it's like literally he was on ice. The bike didn't do anything weird. It just started to slide front and rear all together, kind of at the same time.
Two-wheel drift.
Yep, and then just went down. Like that's one of those very critical areas. I can remember Randy Lawrence, my trainer, in the 250 class, and then also held in the 450 class. That was one thing they always said: do not let your guard down at Phoenix because of the material, because of the dirt. It's a track that can bite you, like just jump up and bite you. And that was one of those things. Come out of the sand, and we see a right-hander into the sand, does his normal deal here, jumps in, lands, and all of a sudden it's just the bike just goes away. That right there was a
that was the start
in the race, man. He had a nice little gap on RJ, and it was gone. Dude, went away.
So let me ask you this. He did the exact same thing in practice. So does that make that slip up even worse? Like, hey, dude, what are you thinking? Is that one of those moments for you if you're coaching Jordan?
I mean, I definitely would be pissed for sure of a mistake happening twice. Especially there, I think, yes, I know it's very easy to make those mistakes, but because of how slippery it is, you should be on your game there at all times, like trying to have the tire as planted as possible, not use the edge of the tire too much, maybe even change up your exit out of this turn and get back to the right more instead of going straight down into the inside to give yourself a little to where you don't have to lean it over as far and lean it over as far. What I mean by that is so you can get more of the round part of the tire on the ground, more of the meat of the tire on the ground, so you have the traction. But yeah, I mean, total bummer. That was the first of the mistake that really caused some havoc for him, because up until then he had a nice little gap on those guys and was riding well.
RV, and then once that happens, so then the worst case for Jordan, right, is that he's got Levi right behind him and RJ right behind him. Those guys were not far in the pack, so the two guys that is in it for the championship is now they pass you. So then you feel like there's some desperation mode, and then it just manifests at that point. So go for it.
Yeah. I mean, look, this is big, big topic. This will probably be the biggest topic of the night here where he jumps onto the tabletop there, doesn't see the lights, where Jordan jumps on, and luckily Levi didn't move in any right or left direction. He just clips the bike there, goes off. Wasn't that gnarly of a crash. It wasn't too nasty, but still we have the lights circled for the folks watching. They are yellow on when you are on the field. When you are down on the field, they are yellow. It shows like on TV, on camera, on YouTube right now with what we see. They do have a hint of red, but when you are down on the field and on the floor of that stadium, those lights are yellow. And back to that, these riders go to riders meeting every morning. And look, I've never read through the rule book at AMA. Never have, never will. There's key things that you need to know about.
Come on, man.
I'll be honest.
You don't want to do some light reading, bro?
Yeah, no, I'm not. No light reading. That's for the team manager. That was for Dan Fahey. Read up the book. So we only have red cross, or meaning red lights on the face of each triple. Right. That is the rule. That's where those are. Any of these rest of these lights are. Ricky, there you go. Go read that off.
Yeah, here we go. So white flag with red cross or red flashing lights. This flag or a red flashing light may be displayed at the beginning of a triple jump or a series of jumps that indicate a potentially hazardous situation on or near the racetrack, in an area that may not be clearly visible to oncoming riders. 3, until the rider is clear of the incident. 2, so throw her back up there. I can't read that fast. Okay. Until the rider is clear of the incident, passing is prohibited. Riders must traverse all obstacles individually. Absolutely no double, triple, step on, off, etc. Riders must exercise extreme caution and not race or accelerate in an unsafe manner. That's the, there you go. Okay. Now, another one. Section D, yellow flag or yellow flashing lights. What RV was talking about, where Jordan crashed, indicates a potentially hazardous situation on or near the racetrack. This includes the siding or cool down laps. Riders must exercise caution. Passing is allowed. Okay. So hold up 1 second. So going back to Jordan Smith on the Boxo breakdown. So he falls down, right? And then now it's desperation mode, in my opinion. He's got the two guys in front of him, right? RJ and Levi. So now you want to get by these guys. So you're probably riding on the edge. You want to get by these dudes, okay? And then, you know, get back into the lead of where you were. When yep. you're doing that and you're having to ride on the edge, things happen. Maybe lapse of concentration. And, you know, you put yourself in a position that you don't want to be in, to where you're – I wouldn't call that desperation, RV, what he was doing. But it's just – it's not where he was when he was landing. So as far as a breakdown goes and the mistakes and what led up to that was that initial crash that he did in the same thing in practice.
Yep. And look, these guys, I always took from – back to the lights. This was a topic, big topic, like we're talking about right now. Like we see, is there's only the red cross lights or red lights on the triple faces. And as a racer, you know that anything is free game unless you see a red cross flag or those red lights. Those pillars that we just saw on the takeoff of that triple, those have lights in it. So that being said, yes, it's a little bizarre to me that that even Levi were to slow down and not jump that, because in also, like, when you read through the rules, you're allowed to jump on a caution flag. That's what it's used for. That means it's caution. We're professionals. They obviously don't want you jumping on any red lights or red cross flags, just for the safety of medical crew or the safety of the other riders. But in our professional racing, everything is free game except for those two scenarios, red lights or red cross flag. And like I said, it looked a little red in this film. That's just the camera. That's just what the camera is showing. But when you are down on the floor, it is yellow. So yeah, do your homework, guys, as racers. That is your job to know where you can make up time. For instance, can you imagine – right there, if Jordan would have been more on his toes and anticipating maybe something that happened, being able to make a quicker decision while Levi goes double and then rolls the tabletop, here comes Jordan, triples on and off, boom, right back into second place. Capable of doing that.
Yep. So here's we're watching the replay, and now we can kind of break it down. So assuming, and then I'm using the Telestrator and trying to show, like, I thought that the lights are red. I think that you could say from a TV standpoint, they look red. And yep. So that's why I said that, like, right there to me. And I'm thinking, you guys got to remember, like, this is in the moment. These guys are still racing. There was not a red flag situation. So I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, oh man, like, you know, look, the red lights are flashing. I did not know that they were not, the red lights were not displayed through rhythm sections, and that they were only displayed on the triple faces. Should me being an analyst, should I have known that exact rule? Of course I should have known it. I will take personal responsibility for not knowing the exact rule, but I am like RV. I've never ridden the whole rule book. I've only ridden, read sections of it. This leads us to the Dunlop due diligence section of the podcast. Dunlop, thank you very much. They are a new partner this year for season 2 of Title 24, and we're glad to have them on board. I bet they were the riders are asking a lot out of the Dunlop tires this weekend. Glendale notorious for lack of grip, so having Dunlop tires on your motorcycle is certainly going to be a help, no doubt. And it just leads us into what we've been talking about in the red flag situations. As you said, RV, the red flags are only display, or the red flashing lights are only displayed on triple faces.
Yes.
Not in the rhythm lanes. So when we were on TV, if we could roll this replay of what happened with Levi and Jordan, we're on, I'm on the broadcast. I'm looking, I'm like, okay, that light looks red to me. I did not know that. I should have known that. I will be briefed on some more of the rules. Nevertheless, RV, you talk about it. What, like when they're at the riders meeting, mm-hmm. and you're going over red cross flags, do they still go over red cross flags and blinking lights and all that fun stuff at every riders meeting in the procedure?
It's been a little time for me that I've been at a riders meeting, but as far as I'm concerned, yes, I believe they do. And 100% they do at Anaheim 1, right? Once these guys get the whole tutorial at Anaheim 1, now as from the rest of the races on, it's a little more of a hangout session and having your coffee down there at riders meeting. But yes, they do run through all of those. And here's the other thing. If you're not that versed on it, get versed on it. If you don't know exactly what this means or that means, or you really want to, dig into it, because the penalty is big. You jump on a red cross, it's a big penalty. You cannot afford to have that. For instance, in that scenario, if that were to be a red cross scenario in that rhythm section, Jordan Smith would be under major scrutiny right now and be docked positions, potentially points. And that would be catastrophic for his
championship.
Right? Yep. His championship hopes at that point, mm-hmm. not out of the scenario, but these 250 guys, we're coming down to, there's only a few races left. So every point counts. So that being said, do your due diligence, know what the lights mean and where they're at on the track and
scenarios.
If you're scared of jumping on that, because he wasn't sure. Well, to me, that you need to know what that means, because if you would have gotten landed on by Jordan Smith, that could have been his championship hopes over a stupid mistake by not really kind of knowing the rule.
Yeah, and so for the record, yes, they send out an email. And are briefed on it before each rider briefing. So all the rules are clear each and every weekend, again, before the rider briefing via email at each round. So I will say, even though in this instance, Levi not knowing maybe exactly how the situation was, if you don't know the situation, and I was talking to somebody about this morning, if you don't know, because I've been in this situation before, and this is why I'm sharing this story, is I would err on the side of caution. So if I wasn't sure about what to do with the Red Cross situation, I would make sure that I wasn't going to be penalized, even if I was going above and beyond, like what Levi's doing right there. So he's looking, he's like, oh, what should I do? I don't really know. Rather than saying, oh, it's yellow right here, I'm good to go, there's no red cross flags, I can let it eat, So he erred on the side of caution. I appreciate him for doing that. I think that's a smart thing to do if you don't know exactly, exactly what the rule is. But at the end of the day, RV, I back you. You better, if you don't know all of them, you better know those rules 120%, right?
There's too much on the line. Yep, there's too much on the line. There's a championship on the line. There's all these points. There's all this bonus money. There's just two. You can't afford to have a mistake like that. That's right.
So the Dunlop due diligence section of Title 24 today is, you know what? The riders need to do their due diligence, not RV and myself. So it is clear, though, like I'm glad now. So in a rhythm lane situation, we all know that the lights are not red. If you see a flashing light, they are yellow. Let it eat unless you see the red cross flag in a rhythm section. If you see the red cross flag in a rhythm section, you best be rolling through there. And if you're not sure where you need, if it's past the rider when you can resume normal speed, I would give it another couple jumps just for security. Would you, Harvey?
Yeah, yeah. No, you got to definitely. But look, AMA does a pretty good job at the Red Cross flag. I will be honest about that. I think it's all just there's a little bit of discrepancy out there. But yeah, err on the side of caution. But you shouldn't have to err that much because you should know the rule and know where you can jump. And there's only two reasons why you cannot jump and pass: red lights or red cross flag. And that is it. Other than that, it's free gaming in this professional racing.
Yeah. And yep, absolutely. There you go.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease and a whole lot of love, you transform 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. LED headlights, spoilers, whatever you need. eBay Motors has it at affordable prices. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride every time. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Good stuff. Hey, as far as Smoke and Joe, were you impressed? Do you think it's too late? I mean, I know he was on the.
Oh, podium. I mean, yes, what it's too late. Yep, he's points wise, just in general, is just too far out. You know, we're coming down to, races are winding down, and he's just not going to have enough time to make up the gaps that he has on three different riders, right? If it was one rider, you could maybe hope for a major mistake, a mechanical, and get yourself back in the title fight. But, you know, with the three that we have, you're not going to have three mechanicals. You're not going to have three major mistakes. So yeah, I think he's technically out of it. They need to really figure out, he needs to figure out himself. He needs to put himself in better race positions. I think that's the biggest thing that we've seen. Joe's a very talented rider, is one of the best, you know, supercross riders out there in the 250 class. But when you start where you start and you are maybe a little timid, like he can be when he's around that many people, some of these guys are just going for it, right? They don't care if you're Joe Shimoda, if you're Levi Kitchen, who you are, if they smell blood in the water or see it, they're going to put those moves on you. You know, I think that he's struggling with getting that motorcycle off the line. I don't think it's the fastest motorcycle out there compared to Star and Pro Circuit. Star being the leader, PC, I think, closed the gap in between what Star had last year on the PC motorcycles. And I think Honda's trailing that. And I think that's what you see. I think Honda's probably like the fourth fastest, right? I think the KTM, the Husky, those are even potentially better than what he's on it. And what I mean by is just, and it's not at this level, it's not, I'm not saying the Honda's bad. I think the Honda's a very good motorcycle, but what I am saying, that half a percent, 1% on the line, and you don't absolutely execute your start perfect, you're not going to be in the game when somebody else has 2 horsepower on you or a horse and a half, and they just do it. They do an okay start and they got a better motorcycle, a faster motorcycle than you. Then it puts you in a tough scenario. It puts you back, your back gets pushed against the wall, and you have to perform 100% perfect every time. And as we know, that's hard to do.
Before we get to a question, Nate Thrasher, Gnarly Crash, I did talk to a team member over at the Monster Energy Star Racing Yamaha, but dude, this was gnarly. I believe he was in third gear from what I have heard, and you know how it is, RV, just if he wasn't in second and he was in third gear, You end up blowing through the face of the jump and you don't get the lift that you needed. Hated to see that. I think he's going to be, he was all right. Is what I heard. So that's good. Yeah, that was brutal.
Honestly, he got lucky. He's very, very lucky that Nate was, the trajectory of where he flew off was in between lanes. If he would have landed in that same position on his butt lower back area on track, on top of a jump.
That'd have been,
yeah,
worst.
Exactly. So, was very lucky that he ended up being off the track, but yeah, to our point of what we were talking about earlier in the show with that long rhythm section and adding the quad in, you know, those jumps were already kind of gnarly, right? Like it was, they're steep, they're big, they're tall. So when you make one mistake just like that, you know, you case it and you can get away with a decent case, but he just had too much of his motorcycle on the front side of that jump.
You can see right there. Pow. Like only his front wheel hit the tip of the jump.
Exactly. And the back was way low on the takeoff there. And look, they got stiff suspension. They got all the best stuff to try to combat all that stuff. But when you're going that speed and you have that inertia behind you and you case something like that, and man, it's like concrete. Those jumps are not soft. So
yeah, he's going to be all right. Yeah. He's going to be all right. Yeah. He's going to, he's got a bone bruise and a concussion. So I'm sure he'll go protocol, but he's got 5 weeks off, but good to see that, you know, outside of the concussion, glad nothing was broken. Preston Harvey, 98, do red flags rule need to be updated? Lots of restarts in Glendale, none for Detroit 250 main. I mean, I think that red flag rules are pretty good. I think sometimes I need to do some due diligence. I don't even know that there is a specific rule for red flag. I think, you know, it's situational. I think like full start or staggered start. What do you think if it's a red flag situation?
That is a tough scenario, right? The red flag and restarting a race because it totally changes the trajectory of the race and can change the outcome of the race too. But it's a tough scenario. Nobody wants to AMA, Muni, no one. Anybody involved wants, nobody wants to pull the red flag. But there's scenarios out there and you're not going to get those scenarios printed out for you. It's going to be, you know, it's all on the fly. You're shooting from the hip when you pull that thing, right? Because it's like, it's a split second decision when you decide. So, yes.
Good. And it affects so much. It affects so many other things too.
Yep, exactly. So to the question for the fans' perspective, could it be refined? Yeah, potentially be refined, but look, the last thing they want to do is pull a red flag. It screws with the racing, the outcome. It puts them delayed on time because when they're live
for live television,
it's a nightmare. A lot of parts,
it's a nightmare for TV RV, as you know. I mean, you've been there, especially the stuff you were doing with RDL, dude. If you get one hiccup, it is an absolute nightmare from a production standpoint as far as live television goes. I think that's a tough one. I mean, I think here's the thing, like as far as redoing it RV, I think if it's rather a full restart, like everybody lined up versus staggered, I think it's situational. Think if they make it to where, all right, if the red flag's thrown, we are going everybody single file, it's gonna piss someone off. You know, there's going to be someone is going to be upset about it. I don't know that there's anything. I don't know that there's a perfect answer. I think we'd have to look at the data and see I think we'd have to look at some kind of data. That is a good question. Preston, thank you very much for that. I just like kind of RV and I are saying, dude, I don't know that there's a perfect answer for it.
You can re-rack them and you can stagger start them. I mean, as a racer, if I'm leading, I'm pissed that we get re-racked. Yeah. Stoked that we're single file. But if I'm racing and I'm in 15th place because I fell or I got a bad start and I'm a front runner, then I'm stoked I get a restart. So, but from me sitting here in my office and as a fan, I think after a certain amount of laps, like 5 or 6 or 8 laps, I know that there is a threshold in there where they go from stagger to gate. But if I'm, you know, the racer, ex racer sitting on the couch, I would say stagger start probably 90% of the time, because that hopefully doesn't change the outcome of the race as yeah. much. Yes, it brings them closer together. Everybody is now interlocked, but you're not subject to a bad start, a whole nother gate drop. And maybe you pulled the whole shot moto or the race one, and then the restart, you're 10th, right?
So like Jorgensen, dude,
yep.
was in the lead. He's going to the main event, and then pow, dude, yep. you have the red flag. They do the restart, to your point. And then, dude, he gets jammed up. He couldn't even finish. His handlebar was jammed in someone's yep. bike. I can't remember whose bike it was jammed up in. And, yep, so to your point, there you go. Hart Kid 44, how hard is it to regroup after a red flag restart? I hated it. I think because, you know, you just have to get back into the mindset, and you're out of your groove, especially if you were leading. Dude, it sucks. How do you do it? You just got to, how hard is it? It's pretty hard because
it's also all situational. It's based on, you know, if you're having a hell of a race and you're feeling yep. it, you're pissed, you're bummed, right? You're like, dude, I got to get back in the groove. Then mm-hmm. I feel like it gives second and third, a chance again. But if you're second and third, and you got James winning, for example, in my scenario, or Dunge winning, I can see, okay, now here's my time to shine. Look, we're going to restart. If it's staggered or re-racking, I think it plays into the guy in second and third's favor, than it does the guy leading. Because if you're the guy leading and you get the restart, you have to get the flag pulled to restart, you're kind of like, no matter what, you're bummed. You're bummed. But if yeah, you're the guy,
oh, yeah, dude, you're so bummed.
Exactly. If you're second, third, or fourth, you're like, wow, okay, I'm going to put myself in a better position, hopefully, and you know, have something to say about it. So
before we get to the quad lock question of the week, which is going to be absolutely awesome this week, I'm trying to think, dude, of a red flag scenario that I had in my career. And let's put it this way, other than the Motocross of Nations in 1998, where they just ended the race completely. There was no restart because it was raining so bad.
We're at Fox Hills,
bro. Fox Hills. Yeah. I remember we were lined up, and it was like myself, DV was there, Veelman, and we were all lined up in this corner, and there's this massive hill, right? And you come out of this right-hander, and this huge hill, and dudes are just scattered on an RV. And they're like, we're just stopped looking at each other. And then we saw this marshal running across the field, and he's got the red flag waving. I was like, thank God, because we're just sitting here parked in a corner where there was nowhere for us to go. So yeah, I don't know that I've ever been in a red flag. Quad Lock question of the week. Quad Lock is a fabulous supporter of Title 24. If you haven't checked them out, go check them out at quadlockcase.com. They've been doing this segment since the inception of Title 24, and we're glad to have them on. My case came in handy today with my bike mount. And my on my road bike, I got a small little one. I posted one on the Instagram the other day. So check out Quad Lock. I think you will be surprised. But the winner of the Quad Lock question of the week this week is JKing431. JKing431 asks, why is there no riders union? And why have all attempts to start one failed?
Ooh, yeah, that's a big topic. Jay King, by the way, King's Island, local buddy from up home, sent that one in. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, Sick, yeah. Used to ride arena cross with him. He's from Monroe, Washington. Send the question in. So he got it in there. The nice. Riders Union, man. Interesting.
What's your
topic,
thoughts, dude? Come on, dude. What you got?
I think. I'd love to see it happen. I think we should have one. There's been multiple attempts, like he had said. I remember myself sitting in a meeting at end of the season in Vegas. There, I think there was about over half of the field from privateers all the way up to myself. Chad, Kevin was there.
You guys didn't invite me.
Yeah, you know, it just didn't go anywhere. You know, it didn't go anywhere.
Where's my freaking?
Where's your invite? Yeah, you were already retired. There was no riders.
Oh, this is current riders. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, look, I think we do need to have one to some extent. The other thing I will say is I do think Feld, Prater, you know, Dirtworks, everybody really does try to keep everybody happy. You know, so I think there is a place for it? Yes, I think there's a place for it. How do we get it going? I'm not really 100% sure. I mean, I don't know about everybody's heard this story, but it's just like the story of when the lights went out at in Vegas, right? All the riders stood back and said, "Hey, I'm not racing. Everybody raise your hand. Let's not race. Let's put our foot down. We're not going on with the show." And this is where Riders Union would work very, very well. If you're part of the union, you got to stand with your guys. But we had, or not we, cause I wasn't racing then, but the story is there was a couple riders that went out and raced. And then it was like, once one domino started to fall, they all went out there because there's money on the line. They're still paying, even though there was no lights. Was it safe? No, it wasn't safe. A lot of them didn't race it, but there were still some out there that did. I don't know. I think our sport needs it, but somebody's going to have to head it up. And the biggest thing is Feld needs to, want to have one too, want to work with the riders union. But as you add another chief inside of there, you know, you need more Indians than you do chiefs. So, that can be tough getting another player involved, you know, to have to work with.
I think, for when you guys were trying to put one together, and I remember that, time when you guys were doing that.
Yeah.
My opinion is you didn't have enough leverage. And what I mean by that is you guys did, like, the television wasn't live. So, you know, like, okay, you're not going to compete. Television, big deal. You know, it wasn't live television. So like if you now fast forward, we have live TV and so the riders have 10 times more leverage. Like, all right, people are tuning in to watch the best guys. I think RV, with all due respect to other people who have tried to develop series, and I wouldn't even call it leagues, but like championships or what have you. If you don't have the best riders, I don't think that our fans are going to turn up for the sport. And that's probably the case in a lot of sports. They want to see the best athletes. They want to see the best athletes compete. So I think that now with live television, now you have something to stand on, because you're like, all right, you guys don't want to march our beat. We're not racing. We're not racing this week. And you don't tell them. You don't tell them until it's time to go on air. And then all the riders leave. I think you can do that. So now now the riders have that leverage.
Yep, and I think leverage is something you need, but also too, doing it, somebody that heads up this riders union and needs to make sure that it's done in the proper way, you know, because we don't want to hurt the sport by not showing up and by doing that, right? So you don't want to make these, you don't want to shoot from the hip. These need to be very calculated decisions if there is a debate of something that as a rider you want something changed. Or if it's more money for more purse money from AMA
pension, I think retirement pension would be big.
Yep, exactly. So pension, is there the funds there? I don't know. I'm not in the nitty gritty of it. All these things are great topics to definitely throw on a whiteboard and see how we can improve this. What we do in our sport is we need to try to improve it and make it better for these guys.
That's right.
And like you said, either some type of retirement or
good insurance.
Exactly. Insurance. So I think there's definitely a topic there. It needs to happen sooner than later. But it needs to be also done the right way and very calculated.
And RV brings up a great point, dude. It's not like having a riders union. It can be done in the right way, and not to tick off the promoters or the broadcast. You know, like it could be done in a right way that can be positive for everyone, and the outcome be more positive rather than negative for everyone involved. I don't think that anyone wants to go into a relationship and piss off, you know, Feld or NBC, like, and right?
Yeah, and I think the big thing, Ricky, is just really being able to have more of a voice than just on Saturday, right? Like, you know, more of a voice than just with the track, or, you know, hey, that's unsafe here, we should do this, we should do that. Like, really sitting down and having somebody head up the Riders Union that goes to Florida, that goes and sits in these meetings and figures out how they can improve it all the way around. Improve it for Feld, improve it for AMA, and improve it, number one, for the athletes. I personally think that, you know, without the athletes, there's no show. So we kind of sit at the top of the top of the totem pole for sure. But we need to have, like I said, we need to have somebody in there that fits that position, that knows that knows the sport very well, and that wants to ultimately grow it for the next generations on down the line.
Yeah, I do. And then one other thing that makes it tough to have a riders union also is you have to consider is all these riders are independent contractors. So you can't really compare it to stick and ball sports. That's a completely another topic of what another challenge would be. So that's a great question, Jay King. I appreciate that. I'm glad you got up with RV and sent the question in, dude. That's awesome.
Yeah, bro.
That's awesome. I think it's a good one. Well, I'll let you get up with him and so he
can. Yeah, slide into the DMs, Joel, and we'll get you the goodies, buddy.
That was a good episode. Hey, everybody, make sure you tune in next week. We're going to be answering a lot of questions, and we're working hard to get Austin Faulkner on. Hopefully he will join us. He'll be coming to his second round, that 250 West or East Coast round in Arlington. Love going to Arlington RV. That'd be cool if we get Austin on. And like I said, we'll rip through a lot of questions that you great fans have, right?
That's right. Yeah, we'll try to get through them, and it'll be good. We'll be able to expand a little bit more with him and, you know, really kind of dig into the nitty gritty of what's changed him and brought him up to the top step. And man, the consistency seems to be there. We'll see. I'm hoping to see that at Dallas again.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, thank you, everybody. Thank you to all of our great partners, as always, United Motorsports, Quad Lot Case, Boxo USA, and Dunlop. Thank you very much. Thank you for all the fan engagement. Thank you for tuning in. Remember, if you want to watch us, you want to view it and not listen to us, you can always watch it. We're on demand. Video version is available on demand at Motorsports on NBC's YouTube page. And then, of course, on Peacock as well. You can watch us there. And then we're across all of the podcast platforms. So whichever podcast platform you use, make sure you download our episode. We'd be extremely grateful for that. So we will see you guys next week. Thanks, as always, for all the support. We appreciate you. RV.
That's right. Thank you, guys, and we'll see you soon.
Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie, and fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.